Meet Reed Lance Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try to fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man, with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
Reed Lance Rosenthal on the Right Side Radio, broadcasting to you from KGAB AM 650 Cheyenne on your dial and the Town Square Network, serving the Intermountain West and KFEZ in Colorado Springs, Walsenburg, all those points down south and northern New Mexico. Welcome to the show, folks. Well, today we're gonna cover a lot of stuff. You know, 3 weeks ago or so, you can go back in the archives at www.ontherightsideradio.com. I gave our president the benefit of the doubt. He gave an illustrious acceptance speech, and I said, you know, let's pretend that he means everything he says in that speech, and kind of went down a litany for you in that show of what we could expect if he meant every word of bipartisan, fix the fiscal cliff, solve the deficit, bring America standing back up in the world, stop the divisiveness, you know, all those things. Well, you know, it's been 3 or 4 weeks. And I think in 3 or 4 weeks, we've kind of seen a pattern. And the pattern, unfortunately, is the same pattern we saw during the campaign, during the 4 years previous, and during the campaign that led up to that, although it was a bit masked at that time. Today, we're going to talk about the international, what we can expect internationally from this president based on what we've seen over the last, 3 or 4 weeks since the election. We're going to talk about energy, and energy links the international and the national scene. It's also the kingpin to the economy, as I will explain to you. And we're going to be talking about domestic things. That's right, domestic stuff. So I'm going to start off this show number one by telling you, take a little break here from where we're headed. And the audiobooks of my novels are coming out. I'm pretty excited about that. In fact, they're read by yours truly, and thanks to the goodness and technical skill of professional folks at the publishers, they really sound pretty good. And I think you'll like them. I think you'll like them quite a bit. So Threads West, Book 1, the audiobook will be available in time for Christmas, around December 10th-ish, and Book 2 around December 15th, 16th, or 17th. You'll be able to get them at our website. That's www.threadswestseries.com. That's threadswestseries.com. Or Amazon, Barnes & Noble, et cetera, et cetera. So, might be a great Christmas gift. Book 3, Uncompagre, is coming out in February. You can reserve it on our site, which is probably a good idea because the last two books that came out were sold out, I mean, literally at 9 o'clock in the morning, much to my delighted surprise. So, you might want to get that done too. No fuss, no muss. It doesn't cost you a thing to get the book reserved. It also gets you first in line for some great contests on the day of these definite fun, I might add, releases that the publishers put on, all sorts of really great prizes. So, now we're going to get into the show, now that I've kind of touted the books a little bit. Have you ever heard the story of the frog and the scorpion? I promised you a couple weeks ago on one of the interviews I did with Jim Barry during the week that I was going to tell you that story, and I've been kind of saving it for this show. So this little frog, he's sitting on the banks of the river, and he's catching the rays. It's a warm sun, pretty day out, and all of a sudden, from behind this rock, walks this scorpion. I mean, it's big, and it's ugly, and it's hairy, and it's nasty. And the frog jumps back and goes, Oh, Mr. Scorpion, don't sting me, please, don't sting me. The scorpion regards the frog, and he goes, I'm not going to sting you, man. I want to get across the river. Can you give me a ride? The frog goes, oh, you'll sting me. You'll sting me. Scorpion goes, oh, come on, use your head. If I sting you, we'll both drown. I'm not going to sting you. Come on, give me a shuttle across the river. The frog thinks about it, and he scratches his little green chin. He says, yeah, you know, that makes sense. Hop on. So Scorpion hops on the frog's back, and they're out in the middle of the raging currents, and the scorpion stings the frog. As they're swept beneath the boiling waters, the frog cries out, oh, why? Why did you sting me? And with its last gasp, the scorpion replies, because it's my nature. That's the prelude to this show. Let's talk about international. Now that we have seen, over the past 4 weeks, we've seen the Benghazi cover-up continue, despite promises that there would be a full and open kind of an accounting and report. Nope. Hillary Clinton's nowhere to be seen. Mr. Obama's nowhere to be seen. He has, you know, ironically used a black woman, Susan Rice, as a shield, as a diversion from himself and his administration on the three key questions. Number one, why wasn't there enough security? With all the intelligence that they had, all the attacks on the other consulates, the attack on this consulate, the British ambassador being withdrawn, 234 incidents over 9 months, the letters from the ambassador himself, the intel that they had from the security people, and the security people saying they wanted to stay in Libya, but the security forces being drawn down. That's question number one. Where was the security? And then number two is, in this seven-hour firefight, with people calling desperately for help that's now been documented by people that were at the scene, how come no help was sent? The President of the United States has told us repeatedly, well, first of all, he told us that it was a video. We know that he knew differently within 24 hours. That's based on testimony, both open and closed to Congress by members of the intelligence community. Number three, he sent out Ms. Rice, and I think he sent her out on purpose because he wanted to use her as the foil he's now using her as. But the president has told us, I mean, I've heard him say it three different times, that his command was to do everything possible to save those Americans. Really. So that means the U.S. military disobeyed a direct order from the commander-in-chief? Or does that mean the U.S. military is so incompetent they can't move troops, planes, jets, gunships, etc. within 7 hours? My. I think that needs some explaining. And then number three, this pre-election video riot that didn't occur, etc. story, where did all this come from? Those are the three questions that need to be answered. But I think it gives you an insight into what this next 4 years is going to be like. Number two, he's already talking about a carbon tax. You know, he can't get Congress to pass cap and trade, thank goodness, so they're going to go in through it through the back door. Number three, he's already kind of unleashed Hillary at the United Nations within the past 4 weeks to try and get the United Nations gun control treaty signed. In other words, kind of circumvent the Second Amendment of our Constitution. And then the Arab Spring, I mean, you've been seeing what's happening over there in Egypt. Now, here was a group that the administration told us was benign, you know, the Muslim Brotherhood, and this was real democracy in action. This is wonderful stuff. And what do we have? We have the Muslim Brotherhood in power in Egypt, and Mr. Morsi has just declared himself kind of the new pharaoh, right? The Egyptian Constitution be damned. My law is the only law. I don't have to listen to the courts. Not a peep from this White House. Not a peep. As there's hundreds of thousands of people in the streets in Cairo, and, you know, basically as this show is being broadcast, protesting this usurping of power that and democracy that the spring was supposed to bring, not a peep from the White House. Kind of like 2009 when the Iranian people in the Green Movement rose up and we might have been able to solve the Iran problem, not a peep from this White House. But this White House is all about democracy and representative government. Okay. You know, actions and words, walk the walk, talk the talk. And then, of course, we have all the rhetoric concerning the fiscal cliff. It seems to me that, number one, we hear the words balanced approach and bipartisan, but we don't hear the words spending cuts. We have heard from the Republicans revenues, which, of course, is what the Democrats are fixated on, but we have not heard the words spending cuts. In fact, we've kind of seen a real dance around reformation of any entitlements. To put this in context for you, Medicare is $46 trillion underwater over the next 20 years. That's $46 trillion. That's just about three times our national debt of $16 trillion. Does that kind of give you an idea of the magnitude of the problem? And then, of course, we have Harry Reid, who, because of Republican incompetence, now has a slightly larger majority in the Senate. After 3 years of not passing a budget, not bringing bills to the floors, et cetera, now he wants to end the filibuster, which would give them a straight up and down vote and would kind of remove some power, some protection from the people. Remember that just about 50% of the people did not vote for Mr. Obama or Harry Reid. That would remove the protection, the oppression of the minority, as Jefferson called it long ago. That would remove that protection from the Senate floor. You know, I think all these things, this is a lot of stuff going on. And then, of course, we have class warfare and gender warfare, which continues. Miss Rice kind of being kind of the poster child for that right now. Look, it's the frog and the scorpion, folks. Okay, that speech, the speech that he gave, which kind of started his rise, that catapulted him to the nomination. You know, there's no red states, there's no blue state, there's only the United States, da-da-da-da-da. Look, that's just not what's happening. In fact, I'm going to give you some instances here where there's actual websites now being set up by Democratic operatives, which are called class warfare, and how they talk about how this is a key ingredient in molding the electorate and in future elections. That's going to be coming up later in the show when we get into the domestic. Let's talk about international. Because, you know, the world is interconnected. I mean, in many ways, America can stand alone, but in many ways, our fate is determined by the fates of others. And ironically, their fates are determined by what we do or don't do here at home, economically and otherwise. So let's talk about Europe, shall we? Yes, but Europe's a mess. Haven't heard much about Europe over the last 2 months, have you? That's because the American press has kept it very quiet. I'm going to interject here that the greatest enemy to our democracy, the greatest enemy of the Constitution and the Republic, is most of the American press right now. The Fourth Estate is not doing their job. They've become ideological warriors and not the reporters and investigators of news. That's not good for a democracy. In fact, in the end, it will spell the end of the democracy. Only an informed public and electorate can make proper decisions. With, you know, whatever the information is, it is. It's kind of like 2 plus 2 is 4. When you start distorting the figures, and you start distorting the outcome and the math, and you say 2 plus 2 is 5, or you don't tell people what 2 plus 2 adds up to, then the folks that are the, shall we say, listeners have a problem, and they're not able to act on it. They're not able to make rational decisions. In Europe, I don't know if you know this, it's just coming out, Mr. Obama actually called the government of Greece and asked them not to bring their austerity measures to the floor of their parliament prior to the election, because he didn't want unrest in the streets of Greece, you know, prior to everybody going out and voting for either Obama or Romney. Now think about that. Couple that with Benghazi. Couple that with some of the other things, which you've heard on the news, maybe even if just fleeting. Okay, what is this guy concerned about, egotistically and otherwise? I would say that, number one, it's ideology, and number two, it's ego. And a distant, distant, distant third, if it's even on his plate, is the welfare of you and the United States of America, at least as he perceives the United States of America. So in Greece, you have a total wreck. They're probably going to get out of the European Union. Germany may follow, so the smallest and the largest economies may leave the Union. The Union will disintegrate. In the meantime, the European Common Bank, Central Bank, is printing money like crazy, just like our Federal Reserve is, which means that inflation is rearing its ugly head. Inflation in Britain has almost doubled over the last year, and back to kind of 1980, close to 1980 levels. If you remember back then, those of you that were around back then, in 1980 we had, give or take, 15% inflation, and that was real government figures. It was actually higher. We had 18% mortgage rates. We had 11% unemployment. Okay, that came from printing money, spending lots, taxing high, just exactly the road that we're going down now. You think that's a coincidence? I don't think it is. Remember the story about the frog and the scorpion. So Europe is one of our biggest markets for exports. As Europe kind of falls apart and fractures, I mean, France is having huge problems, Italy, Spain, pigs. I've done a number of shows on this. They're in the archives. You should really listen to them. I was one of the very first folks in the media to bring this to everybody's attention long before any of the national media. If you go back to last year's shows, in fact, more than a year ago, like last September, October of 2011, I have several shows. One is Greece is California, etc. Very insightful. Listen to those shows and see what's happening now. And unfortunately, because I wish I was wrong, what I projected is exactly what's occurring. As Europe goes down the road, our exports go down the road with it. Okay, that will affect our economy and our growth. Right now, the European Central Bank and the powers that be are projecting only 0.3, that's 0.3% growth in the European economies. That's recession, folks. So it's very possible that the European recession, not very possible, it's absolutely positive, will affect the United States. Let's talk about China. Okay, you may have heard a little scuttlebutt here and there about China's military. Well, a lot of the intelligence outlets, including Lignit, who's probably one of the foremost intelligence services who gathers news and kind of puts it in intelligence format, all run by former CIA, et cetera, folks, they're saying that the Chinese military is quickly gaining power in the Chinese government. In other words, the civilian government, which is communist, the civilian government is kind of waning. Military is kind of on the ascendancy. That's probably not a good thing, particularly since China, with a rapidly expanding population, a rapidly expanding economy, is hungry, in fact, starved for all sorts of resources, energy resources, and land, right? They need to grow food. And desperate countries do desperate things. They have had a long time enmity with Japan. Harsh words, once again, masked by the U.S. media, have been exchanged between China and Japan. There's been, shall we say, some aggressive moves toward Australia. Do you remember that little news item, probably 2-3 months ago, where we're sending 2,500 Marines, you know, big deal, 2,500 Marines, to Australia? It's all part of this. It's part of a much bigger picture. And China just launched its first aircraft carrier about a month ago to much fanfare. Okay? You didn't hear much about it, but it happened. And just a few days ago, they landed their first F-15-type fighter plane on that aircraft carrier, which all our intelligence experts, these are the same people that Mr. Obama is blaming for Benghazi, said wasn't going to happen for several years. Gee, now if you kind of interpolate that over to Iran, I wonder when Iran's going to get the bomb. But I digress. The bottom line is China is rising, and their economy is slowing, and their needs for resources and land is growing, and their military is becoming more powerful. And we're not doing anything about it. That's a bad recipe. Be thinking about that in the future. Let's talk about Russia. Oh, my. Russia. Yes, the famous reset with Russia. I'm sure by now you've all seen, and if you haven't, you should go and see. I've talked about it in previous shows. You should go see that video of, off mic, though not knowing it, Mr. Obama leaning over and chillingly patting the Russian president on the knee and saying, "Don't worry, after my election I can be more flexible." Wow, what did he mean by that? And how come he didn't share what he means by flexible with the American people during the election process? I wonder. Look, the bottom line is Russia has been our enemy for a long, long time. They have never been our friend. They have competing interests in many, many various places around the world. They also have competing interests in some ways, shape, and form with China. But, you know, it's a very uneasy, shall we say, trio of countries, the United States, China, and Russia. We're going to have to see how this plays out. It is, unfortunately, if you have read history, if you know anything about it, kind of the same, shall we say, structure of planetary power that existed right before World War I. Not a good thing. Not a good thing. And you have the chance for secret alliances ganging up by two against one, the one reacting with military, all sorts of bad stuff. Watch this trio of power very, very carefully. In terms of the Soviets, because, you know, Mr. Romney was poo-pooed by calling them an enemy, let's see what the Soviets have done since Obama was elected, first of all, 4 years ago. Number one, there was a huge spy ring. I talked about it on the last show, which, by the way, if you missed it, is really terrific and kind of ties in with what I'm going to talk about domestically and with the United Nations. The last show was a interview of Brian Sussman, the author of Climategate and the author of Echo Tyranny. This guy really knows his stuff, and he does a wonderful job in those books of tying in science. He's an Emmy Award meteorologist and researcher slash scientist, but he ties in the politics of the so-called global warming to the reality. I mean, he has the facts, figures, stats, temperatures, you name it, going back hundreds of years, which the press makes sure you don't hear about. He also talks about the, and we're going to talk a little bit about it today, he talks about the absolute hoax from kind of the British nerve point of global warming research, where they doctored, and they have the emails proving it, where they doctored all sorts of data to try and make sure that people didn't realize the world was actually cooling and has been for decades right now. And also to doctor and math the fact that the world has had hot spells, in fact, hotter than now, over the last several thousand years. And, of course, that was long before man had combustion engines and we had to worry about fossil fuels, or, as Brian talks about last week, this ridiculous notion that CO2 is somehow a greenhouse toxic gas, even though it forms, you know, three-quarters of the life on the planet and is absolutely necessary to the entire vegetative community on the planet. I'm digressing just a bit, but that last show is pretty worth seeing, and that was over Thanksgiving, so some of you may have missed it. www.ontherightsideradio.com, it'll come right up for you. Let's go back to Russia. So in the last 4 years, Obama, with the magic reset button, he's kind of, shall we say, facilitated Russia's interference with America. The Jackson-Vanik Amendment, which was, you know, kind of the trade for human rights. They give human rights. We help them out with this, that, and the other. That has gone by the wayside. It's kind of gone, okay? It's updated. Human rights replacement, never been signed. He's dramatically slashed the U.S. nuclear deterrent stockpiles. Russian leaders haven't done the same. Then he took out the missile defense system, stopped building it in the Ukraine and Poland and Czechoslovakia. These are three of our staunchest allies. I mean, Poland sent troops to fight with us in both Afghanistan and Iraq, yet we've left them on the lurch with no missile defense despite previous treaties to the opposite. He's proposed $500 billion in military cuts, plus a sequestration. Oh, Russia is just licking its chops, and so is China. We have been blocked and thwarted by Russia and China at almost every turn in trying to deal with Iran, Syria, and a host of other problems, particularly in the Mideast, where Russia wants to expand its influence. at the UN Security Council. Gee, we're back to Mrs. Rice, aren't we? Anyway, the bottom line is that Russia, and Russia also kind of cut off natural gas supplies to Europe, and has taken a number of other actions, shall we say, that are anti-American, anti-European, and pro-Russian. And of course, you know, in the last year, the new Russian quote-unquote president, premier, Mr. Putin, former KGB officer, has, shall we say, definite desire to reestablish the quote-unquote Russian Empire, kind of reconstitute the Soviet Union. So if you look at all this, and you look at these poor Eastern European countries who have regarded up till now America as their ally, I mean, what's going to happen? You got American military stepping back, Russian and Chinese military stepping up, America losing influence, and you have these other countries out there who are dependent, unfortunately, upon Russian energy, natural gas, pipelines, etc., which, by the way, is going to bring us as a great segue into energy in just a moment or two. Last but not least is the Mideast and the United Nations. Look, the Mideast is a wreck, okay? The Arab Spring is a wreck. It has not turned out at all like was represented to us by our government. And I think our government knew all along it wasn't going to. We've talked about Egypt. Jordan is on the brink. It's teetering, okay? One of our last pro-West allies over there. We've replaced one dictator with even more brutal dictators who are antithesis to our interests. And we have more or less let Israel swing on the branch. You know the reason that Israel did not go into Gaza, which they should have done? I mean, the only way to eliminate weapons, to eliminate the rockets which are raining down on them, is to go take them out. The reason they didn't is because there was pressure put on them by the American military via the Obama administration. Israel's highly dependent on parts. You know, they need parts for their Air Force. They fly American fighters. And for their armaments, they use mostly American armor, tanks, etc. They need our parts. And when we tell them behind the scenes, as we pretend to be their friend, you know, we'd hate to see this parts supply line kind of wind down and slow down, because how are you going to defend yourself against Iran? That kind of puts Israel in a vice. And I think that's the reason they didn't go into Gaza. At the same time, you have a lot of chest thumping, but unenthusiastic by the Obama administration, how they stand behind Israel. Look, the bottom line is this administration has not stood up for and will not stand up for real democratic movements in these Arab countries, i.e. Iran 2009 and Egypt right now. And number two, does not like Israel and will not stand up for Israel, even though it'll make the public facade of doing so. I almost guarantee you, I don't know this, but you know, I can put 2 + 2 together. I almost guarantee you that Morsi's, that's the Egyptian guy we were talking about, that Morsi's influence in negotiating this quote-unquote ceasefire between the Palestinians, Hamas, whom were born from the Muslim Brotherhood, which spawned Morsi, I guarantee you that putting together this fragile truce between Israel and the Palestinians, the quid pro quo that he got from the Obama administration behind the scenes was, you go ahead and grab more power and we won't say anything. What do you think? You think all these dots are connected? You think this is all a coincidence? Nothing is a coincidence, folks. And I think what you're going to see in the future, because this show is kind of about the future, is you're going to see more and more tense moments with Russia. You're going to see it become more and more emboldened by American weakness and lack of resolve. You're going to see China flexing its muscles, also due to American weakness and lack of resolve, both economically and militarily. And you're going to see Europe and our allies kind of retreating, cowering, and making nice with the other two because they can't trust the United States. That's going to make for a much more unstable world. And that instability is going to be used as a crisis, because these folks love crises. You know, crises scare people, and that people like to trade security. They want to be secure. They want to be safe. Remember Jefferson's words, he who trades security for liberty shall wind up with neither. So all this bubbling up in the international scene is going to result in less security for the United States, some crisis opportunities for this government to seize and control more power, have more regulations, etc., and it's going to damage our economy in a number of different ways. And you're going to see the United Nations be relied on more and more heavily, unfortunately, by the Obama administration in a number of ways. Number one, you may see carbon taxes, which this administration is already talking about, come through the United Nations. You may see a United Nations global tax on countries or people, even. The gun treaty is already well along in the United Nations, and that's a circumvention, absolutely blatant circumvention, which is being hidden from you by most of the press to take away your rights to keep and bear arms, the Second Amendment of the Constitution. You can see the United Nations have, or push, shall we say, even more Agenda 21. Okay, and we've talked about Agenda 21. I have a number of shows on, a number of interviews on it. Listen to them in the archives. Go over the actual UN document, some of its, shall we say, preambles and edicts, its actual wording. You can also find it in Section 3 of my book, Land for Love and Money. I devote that whole section to what government is doing in real estate. You need to know this. You need to be able to recognize it. There's going to be more and more influence by globalists, which is what Mr. Obama and his administration is, in the next 4 years, and it's going to affect your daily life. And they're going to use these hotspots in the world and the ascendancy of Russia and China, which we're allowing, to form the foundation of some of the things they want to get done in that regard, and it will affect you. We're going to take a slight break right now, and then I'm going to be back, and I'm going to talk about energy, which is hugely important. In fact, it is the one way, it is the one thing that just might save our butts if we handle it right. The question is, will this administration allow energy to be handled in the manner it should in the United States? Because we are projected to outproduce Saudi Arabia by the year 2017 in oil, and we are going to be number one in natural gas production. But there's a number of ways to screw this up. Both the employment it generates, the wealth it will generate within the country, and the reduction of debt and deficit it could generate in the country. I'll be right back. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side, KGAB, AM 650, and the Town Square Network serving the Intermountain West, broadcasting out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and KFEZ, Colorado Springs, serving that entire quadrant of southern Colorado and northern New Mexico.
It is the spring of 1855. America is on the cusp of her great westward expansion and on the threshold of becoming a world power. The promise of land, freedom, self-determination, and economic opportunity is known worldwide, drawing immigrants from every continent eager to exchange lives of drudgery and emptiness for the hope and romance of a country embarked on the course of greatness. This is the setting of the 16-book Threads West series, Reed Lance Rosenthal's epic American saga of the West, in which a few brave men and women venture out to love and struggle in the beautifully vibrant but unforgiving landscape of the West, Threads West. And when you finish that multi-award-winning number one best-selling novel, you can also get the number one best-selling Maps of Fate, the second book in the saga, just released this spring. Find them on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and in all major bookstores. Go to ThreadsWestSeries.com. That's ThreadsWestSeries.com.
Welcome back, folks. I'll remind you, too, after that little commercial break, that the audiobooks of these award-winning novels, in fact, Maps of Fate just won Best Western of the Year and runner-up Best Historical Fiction of the Year from the USA Book Review National Awards. Way pleased about that. But the audiobooks will be out, www.threadswestseries.com. Check them out. Might be a great little Christmas gift. Okay, now we're back to the the real world, shall we say. Let's talk about energy. You know, energy is kind of, shall we say, it's next to food. It's next to food. This world runs on energy. Commerce runs on energy. Businesses run on energy. You run on energy. Your car, your house, your cooking, you name it. Okay? Where you work needs energy to operate so that you get a paycheck. Energy drives the planet. And fossil fuels are here to stay for at least the next 2, 3, or 4 decades as alternative forms of energy, real alternative forms. We're not talking about the crony capitalism of the last 4 years, but real breakthroughs in alternative energy occur, become commercially viable, and come to market. In the meantime, we have fossil fuels. And it just so happens with horizontal drilling and a host of other technological breakthroughs, which America kind of leads the world in. I mean, we're about 5-10 years ahead of the world on most of this. We have discovered that we have, and we can produce, and we can extract more oil than any other country in the world. That includes Saudi Arabia. And way more natural gas than any other country in the world. Did you know that our domestic needs were served, 83% of our domestic needs were served in the last year by domestic production? That's a huge increase. This has nothing to do with Mr. Obama. This increase has been entirely, 100% on private lands. In fact, production on federal lands, including the Gulf, et cetera, is down 37% since he took office. Of course, that fact isn't brought to light to you by either Mr. Obama or his media. This energy is more than just energy. It's more than just the fuel in your car. Okay, this energy is commerce. When you have an abundant, stable, and cheap supply of energy, you will attract investment from other places on the planet. Other countries and other companies, foreign companies, will build plants here, will increase employment here. It's already happening. Okay, the cost of your living will go down. It will cost less to fill your tank, less to heat your house, less for your employer. In other words, they'll have more profits to pay you more money in your salary or your bonus, less money for your employer to operate. This has an effect all the way down. It lowers the price of food because of food production and transportation. I mean, it's huge benefits. It increases your income, decreases your cost, and generates lots of revenues to the government because of taxes, whatever the form those taxes are going to take. So this is all good stuff, right? Now, I wonder why the EPA is coming out with all sorts of regulations to try and control this fracking and horizontal drilling when America's on the verge of this basically being number one in the world in energy. Number one in the world of energy. And, you know, the price of natural gas, which is very cheap right now, is going to rebound, not by much, but enough to stabilize the markets and allow export. You know, the other thing that this does, that energy does for us, is we have a huge import-export imbalance. In other words, we import far more goods, services, and therefore dollars, we'll call them, than we export. That's because of the drop in our manufacturing in China and a whole bunch of things. The bottom line is if we're exporting energy, if we have ports that can export liquefied natural gas to the rest of the world, if we export oil because we've satisfied our domestic needs and we're producing way more than that, which is likely by 2017, I mean, that's just years away, folks. That's a huge amount of capital that's coming into the United States that makes your life better and the life of your children's children better. Let me give you some examples, okay? U.S. gas, in the last year, U.S. gas production jumped. In the last 5 years, it's up 20%, and that's wildly increasing. Right now, natural gas here is about $3 a cubic foot. That's called an MCF. In Europe, it's about $11 per MCF. Remember, Russia supplies Europe. And in Asia, it's approximately $17 per MCF. Think about all those profits flowing into the American economy. Okay? Russia produced last year 660 677 billion cubic meters, BCM, of natural gas. That's 20% of the world's total supply. The U.S. produced last year 651 BCM, 19.2% of the world production. You know, Russia exported 29% of its production, which made it the number one exporter. And, you know, we're the number two producer, right? We're about to be number one. We're only a fraction behind top dog Russia. So you'd think U.S. would be, you know, amongst the world's largest exporters. We're not. No, we're not even close. The tiny Arab nation of Qatar, with 2 million people, like its population is like the size of Houston, is the number two global exporter behind Russia. Qatar only produces about 151 BCM a year, which is only 4.5% of the world's annual total, but it ships out 119 BCM. Do you know what our export was? Zero. Zero. Because we have no export facility. And guess why we have no export facility? That's because Obama's EPA is pulling out all the stops to try and stop their construction. Why would that be? There's one outfit right now who that finally got the permits to construct a huge terminal in Louisiana, okay, and it was assisted greatly by the state down there and Bobby Jindal. But this is Cheniere Energy. That's C-H-E-N-I-E-R-E, Energy. And their export terminal should be started operating in 2015. Listen, even though the completion of this terminal is 3 years away, to give you an idea of the demand for this unbelievable American product, and by the way, there's the same demand for coal. There's the same demand for oil. I mean, America could reverse its entire debt, lower everybody's taxes, increase everybody's standard of living within the United States, just by following the course of energy, the resources that we have, which, by the way, are 100-year supply. And by that time, we will be on alternative energy. So it won't matter that we're running out. So Cheniere Energy, even though it's one export terminal, the only export terminal that will be operable ever in the United States, well, up to that time in the United States, they have a 20-year supply agreement already with Spanish Natural Gas, which is called Gas Natural. That company is going to buy 3.5 million metric tons, that's BCMs, of LNG, that's natural gas, annually. That begins in 2017. Cheniere has also struck a 20-year deal with the United Kingdom's oil and gas company, BG Group. And other customers are lined up and deals are getting inked, including the country of India. Their marketing company is called GAIL, G-A-I-L, India Limited, and Korea Gas Corp. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Does it give you an idea of what energy could do for this country, for your life, for the country's balance of trade? You name it. Energy could literally alone, the one industry, which, by the way, employs 9.2 million people, could employ an additional 2 to 5 million people over the next 5 years if unleashed. That one industry could just about solve the economic problems of your family and the United States. So how come we're not going for it? How come that progress is being impeded in every single way, shape, and form? Well, we're going to be getting into that because that brings us to the domestic segment of our show. And, you know, I may not even finish this. I may have to complete this next week along with a great interview I have with a Mideast specialist. I'll tell you more about that in the promos coming up this week. But, look, we have unique opportunities in the United States. The question is, if somebody is for America, for the American people, and for the middle class, why would they not only assist them, why would they take aggressive actions to stand in their way? You should ask yourself that question because it's important, very important. By the way, if you want to look up America's standing in oil production, et cetera, we're supposed to surpass Saudi Arabia in just 5 years. You can go to Bloomberg News. There's been several articles on that. There was one, when was it? 11/18, November 18th. And also you can kind of check out the IEA. The IEA is the International Energy Association. They do complete studies. So, I mean, you're getting it from kind of the horse's mouth. They have no skin in the game. They just kind of keep track of everybody's production reserves, et cetera. And you can look this up for yourself. All right, we're going to take a short break. I'm going to be back, and we're going to finish up with the domestic stuff.
400,000 readers have made the Threads West and American Saga series a number one bestseller in 2011 and 2012. Threads West and Maps of Fate are the first two books of a 16-book tale of the adventure and romance of America, her people, her spirit, and the West, winning 8 major national awards, including Best Western, Best Romance, and Best Historical Fiction. Author Reed Lance Rosenthal is a fourth-generation land and cattleman whose cowboy heart and poet's pen capture the spirit of the American landscape. His long-standing devotion to wild and remote places and to the people, both past and present, who leave their legend and footprint upon America and the American West, is the inspiration for all of his writing. Threads West, the first of the series, and Maps of Fate, Book 2, are available at all major bookstores, Hastings, Barnes & Noble, and on Amazon.com. Or go to ThreadsWestSeries.com. That's ThreadsWestSeries.com.
This is Reed Lance Rosenthal. Welcome back on the Right Side Radio, KVZ FM, Colorado Springs, and that whole lovely area in southern Colorado and northern New Mexico, and KGAB AM 650 in the Town Square Network, serving the Northern Rockies. So, we've been talking about what we might expect from an Obama administration if he didn't mean his acceptance speech. We've been over international. I mean, listen, we could spend 3 shows in every one of these. You know, they're never ending, so I'm trying to give you a broad brush. We've been over energy, which is kind of a key to international power, politics, and money, and a key to domestic power, politics, and money, and to your family's quality of life, I might add. And now we're going to talk about the domestic scene. Oh, boy. Well, look, if you take the international and the energy, which all ties into the domestic, the bottom line is they're going to play what's going to happen internationally with Russia, China, the Mideast, Israel, the ascendancy of Al-Qaeda, which they've tried to mask, or the reascendancy of Al-Qaeda, Muslim Brotherhood type, you know, Islamist extremists, dictators coming to power, Sharia law, etc., in the Mideast and North Africa. This is going to affect you. The amount of energy that is produced in the United States, whether or not it's exported, how it's distributed, whether or not we build new refineries, which, by the way, the Obama administration is actively blocking. That's one of the reasons gas and oil prices remain high despite this surplus. We have a 22-year supply of oil in surplus right now. 22 years. Yet prices for gas in your car go up. That's because there's no refining capacity. You can't put oil in your car. It has to be refined to gasoline. The Obama administration is actively blocking this. In fact, they're becoming more aggressive about it. If you put all this together, you come up with a picture of someone who almost wants to kind of decrease America's standing in the world, perhaps to create a crisis which can be used at home to grab more power. That's number one. Number two, who has a worldview. In other words, we should cede some of our sovereign rights of both our people, our Constitution, or our country to the United Nations. That's because it'll be a safer place. I mean, that's what you're going to hear. It's going to be a safer place if the United Nations handles this. And then you have somebody who talks about wanting to get the $16 trillion debt, $6 trillion of which he created, under control, but doesn't have a budget, hasn't proposed a budget, talks about bipartisan, but doesn't do bipartisan. They talk about the fiscal cliff, kind of the manufacture of another crisis. In my personal opinion, I think we ought to jump off that fiscal cliff. I think only that kind of shock to this system is going to wake some people up. No offense, single ladies listening out there who voted for Mr. Obama because you want your $10 a month free contraception. You know, listen, contraception is your deal. You know, you want to have it, great, go for it. But you know what? I don't want to pay the $10 for you. And if you voted for Mr. Obama because you want $10 free contraception, that's going to be the least of your worries in 4 years. I hope you're listening to this show, and I hope that you at least have an open enough mind to think about the things I'm saying. Do the research on your own. And I don't mean go to a left-wing pundit site. I don't mean go to a right-wing talk show host. Go to the horse's mouth. All this stuff is on government websites. You can listen to the government, the agencies that have not been mutated, shall we say, who are still producing decent figures. You can go to, like, this International Energy Association. This stuff's all out there for you. I want you to think about it, because there are really, really big things afoot, and $10 a month is not one of them. Trust me on this. It really isn't. So in this domestic, shall we say, pot that we have a whole bunch of things that are going to go on. Number one, your taxes are going to go up, folks. That's right. They're going to go up by a lot more than $10 a month. Okay, your payroll taxes are going to go up because that's not going to be the payroll tax holiday. It might come back for a few months, but it's going to be phased out. You think this is just taxes on rich people? No, this is taxes on everybody. In one of my previous shows, once again on the archives, on therightsideradio.com, I did an entire show on the taxes in Obamacare. 21 new taxes, $675 billion. This does not include sequestration, falling off a fiscal cliff, all that stuff. That's additional taxes. It doesn't include the payroll taxes. And most of that $675 billion is going to be paid by the middle class. That's right, on the sale of our homes, on dividends, on income. This we're soaking the 1% so that the 99% don't have to pay anything is a bunch of nonsense. Everybody's taxes are going to go up. That's less disposable income for you. I might add, way less disposable income for you. And you folks who are on fixed incomes, I mean, where you are literally relying on interest, you're relying on dividends, you're relying on capital gains. Oh, wow. Are you in for a rude surprise? And if you think that this money is going to be used to pay down the debt, let me tell you, if you don't have a budget, you're not serious about paying down your debts. Now, you know that from your own household, right? Well, this president over the last 3 years has not allowed, through Harry Reid, a budget. The budgets that he has presented have been so terrible that they've been voted down unanimously 3 years in a row by the House and Senate. That's unanimous disapproval. Not one Democrat voted for his budget. And in this new era of bipartisanship since he was elected, guess what? He hasn't proposed a budget yet for 2013. That's supposed to be done by law in October. You think he's serious about paying down debt? I don't think so. I think he wants more debt. I'm going to direct you to Cloward and Piven. Go right online, type in Cloward, C-L-O-W-A-R-D, and Piven, P-I-V-E-N, big Columbia University professors. They wrote a paper. It's called Orchestration of Crisis. I think it'll be an epiphany for you. I've talked about it in previous shows. You can find it in the archives, but very quickly, their theory is, you don't need a revolution to take down capitalism in the United States. You just need to overburden the system with financial entitlement. Now, you don't believe it? It's online. Read it. Mr. Obama has even talked about them in his books. Gee, you think that's a coincidence? I don't think so. So, on the domestic side, we're going to go over or partially over the fiscal cliff. That's going to create a crisis. That's going to give them, reason to do X, Y, and Z, which is really where they're going anyway. We're going to have no meaningful cut in spending. You're going to have a $20-plus trillion primary deficit and a $140-plus trillion unfunded liability deficit. That's $1 million per person, folks. Huh? you're going to have a kid next year? Hey, welcome to the world, man. Here's your bill for $1 million. That's right. And the only way to get out of that is, or partially out of that, is either the energy sector, which they're trying to dampen, or inflation, which comes from printing more money, which they're doing with abandon. I've had shows on that too. Okay, if you take a look at the QE3 show from about 2 months ago in the archives, I go over the entire thing of what the Fed is doing. I'm not going to repeat it here, but it's $45 to $85 billion a month that they're printing out of thin air. What is worth most is what there's the least of. When you print more dollars, each dollar is worth less. That's inflation. That's the real tax on your lifestyle. You combine inflation with what's going to happen with taxes, and I think the resulting unemployment, and the increase in entitlement spending, and therefore the increase in debt, and therefore the increase in the percentage of expenditures, and the expenditure of, and the allocation of resources in the United States to the government rather than the private sector, and I think we're kind of headed for, should we say, less than happy days. How's that? Class warfare? Oh, look, you haven't seen anything yet. Now, you think that was just a mistake? You think people are making this up? You know who George Soros is, right? He funds the Tides Foundation, all sorts of left-wing groups, contributed millions of dollars to Obama's campaign. He's a billionaire. You know, MoveOn.org, you name it, okay? Was behind the Occupy Wall Street movement. Guess what just got launched here? We're talking about, like, last week? Several websites by George Soros think tanks. And do you know what they're called? WageClassWar.org. That's WageClassWar.org. Go on there. Take a look. Absolutely. Let me tell you what the director of this new WageClassWar.org has to say, because he's actually amazingly pretty bold and, you know, pretty upfront. CAF, that's the name of the outfit that launched this website, which is a Soros outfit. The co-director, his name is Robert Burosage. Yes. America's growing, I'm quoting, America's growing diversity and its increasingly social liberal attitudes played a big role in this election. But looking back, we are likely to see this as the first of the class warfare elections of our new gilded age of extreme inequality. Quote, more and more of our elections are going forward will feature class warfare, only this time with the middle class fighting back. Yeah, we just talked about that, didn't we? And the candidates are going to have to be clear about which side they're on. In 2012, I'm still quoting, candidates who supported the economic interests of the many over the few won their elections. Populism was the voice, but economic opportunity was the message. The pundits may wring their hands, but in the future it won't be value voters, angry white men, or soccer moms that win elections. It will be class warfare. Wow. So does that kind of give you an idea what's coming your way? Bipartisan? Non-divisive? I don't know. This seems to be the opposite to me. Listen, terrorism, if we don't get immigration under control and we don't get Iran under control, which is our number one international threat, and they get a nuclear bomb, not only can we kind of kiss our ally Israel goodbye, but we can probably kiss an American city goodbye, because we can't control people going in and out of the country, and Iran will have the technology and certainly has the will. Once again, just read his speeches. Just read the president of Iran's speeches, okay? Don't take my word for it. Just read his speeches. He means it. We're going to have a big problem with terrorism. And the way we have handled Benghazi, in my opinion, the weakness that we have showed, the ineptitude that we have showed, the intentional avoidance that we have showed is what started all the unrest in Gaza, is what has started this increase in terror attacks in Iraq and Afghanistan, or fueled them, because weakness perceived, look, power fills vacuums. Weakness perceived will create conflict. Okay? Conflict creates crisis, and crisis allows people to further their ideological ends. We're out of time. I have some more domestic things which I think are really important. Supreme Court, gun control. I'm going to do a whole show on gun control. Agenda 21, how it's kind of permeated into local stuff. loss of your privacy in the name of quote-unquote security because of some of these other things. We're going to talk about those in future shows. But for right now, we're out of time. I hope I've given you a taste of what I unfortunately think is coming our way over the next 4 years, now that we have seen this president over the last 4 weeks since his glowing speech. And I want you to think about it, because it's going to affect your life in a lot of different ways. And I hope I'm wrong. I'd be thrilled if I was half wrong. I'll be ecstatic if I'm totally wrong. Unfortunately, I don't think I am. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal. Have a great week. We will talk to you next week.
For more information about Reed and his work, please go to OnTheRightSideRadio.com. There you can also click to purchase the first two volumes of his number one best-selling historical Western series, Threads West, An American Saga, and Maps of Fate. And now the first volume of his new nonfiction series, Land for Love and Money, is available everywhere, or go to LandForLoveAndMoney.com. That's Land for Love and Money. We'd also like to remind you that if you've missed any shows, you can go to the show archives on Reed's OnTheRightSideRadio.com webpage. We look forward to seeing you again next week for another episode of Reed Lance Rosenthal, On the Right Side.